welcome to the fourth episode of the Alt Animation Podcast, the podcast that talks about the saltier side of the animation industry. With me, Josh Ryan.
And Robert Orno.
How's it going, guys? The theme of today's episode, overall, is, I guess, teamwork in
groups,
animation.
Pals, buddies.
With a lot of, independent animators, you see a lot of people working alone. Bill Plimpton, Don Hertzfeldt, a lot of these types of guys.
Very alone.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of actual, like, studios, per se, is one dude, and he's doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, actually, there's a really cool talk that is on the Creative Talent Network on Vimeo. Oh, by the way, Robert.
Yes.
We are starting to do show notes. All of our show notes are now going to be on the Alt Animation Facebook page. So make sure you go to Facebook, type in Alt Animation, and the show notes will be there. Like the page. You know, you might find a friend on there that you can talk to.
You might find me on there.
You might find Robert, yes. But there's a really cool talk called What is Animation Today? And I don't really want to discuss what they talk about, but it's awesome. They talk about motion capture, the actual concept of animation, like what constitutes animation, what should be considered, especially for like the Academy Awards and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
would you say that it's very, I mean, did you find it, you're talking about Oscars, I mean, that's fairly mainstream. Did you find that it was, pretty good information for like someone who's trying to work off the beaten path as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's nothing that's like specific in terms of, I guess, techniques. They have some really good, big names in the industry.
Talented people.
Yeah, people from, that have their own studios, that work at big studios. Everyone just kind of is chatting about it. It's really cool. Go to our Facebook page and you'll see a link for that. But if you just want to type it in, it's Vimeo, the Creative Talent Network, and they've got a bunch of cool stuff. Like, they got an Untangling the Look of Tangled thing where they talk about, kind of how they went through the process of animating that movie, which is really cool. And I actually found out about this link from the Reanimators podcast. So again, if you guys ever get a chance, listen to that podcast. But the overall theme of today's, episode is teamwork. Number one, we interviewed Dennis Boyer, which we're going to say he's actually French, but we can't pronounce his name, so we say it as Texan as we can.
I'm gonna take a stab.
Go ahead.
Denis Boyer?
Yeah, he
can let us know if I just made a fool of myself or not.
You can decide which one of us sounded goofier. I'd say it was you, definitely. But yeah, teamwork. We're going to talk about that. I got a really cool...
Dennis Boyer is, of course, part of Team Surf.
The director of Meat Buck, his twin brother, directed Salesman Pete.
Mark Boyer.
Yes, and I mean, the whole team itself is just amazing. They're really cool. But we'll get to that interview later, and we're going to talk about teams and teamwork and, what makes a good team, some examples of some interesting new creative teams. But first, we're going to just talk about a couple, cool, interesting alternative animation stories.
All right.
Number one, animated augmented reality tattoo sings a little song. again, you'll be able to find this link on our Facebook page, but it's really cool. This guy got a tattoo of the barcode, and now augmented reality, a lot of people are talking about it these days. It's, the ability to use a external peripheral device to change the way in which you see the world, so it's augmented. A guy got a tattoo of a barcode over like a canvas of other tattoos, and that's in the middle, and you can hold an iPhone up to it, and it will play an animated tattoo, and he can change
because
it.
Because it's reading the barcode.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can change it whenever you want, which I think is pretty cool. And, it's definitely a new way to take animation.
You can change the animation or the barcode?
No. you could. I'm sure you could, do a cover-up on it or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's really cool. And the fact that you can actually have, like, an interactive, animation that interacts with the tattoo that's already there is really cool.
I'm going to say I think it's kind of dumb.
Well,
You have to put your... Okay, so, just in the
how
example...
How many tattoos do you have?
All right, you jerk. So I don't have one tattoo like somebody, but...
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you might not like the idea of tattoos in general.
No, I like... Okay, so here's the thing. A tattoo is on your skin. This is on your iPod, which you're holding up to your skin. You're literally holding it up to the tattoo.
You set me up to look really cool because I actually have an idea that I want to do is a Skinimation tattoo where you get a bunch of little tiny tattoo frames, you take a picture of each of them, and then you make an animation out of that, which you can play on your iPhone later.
Okay, so, like, what? Which part of your body would be, like, the canvas?
Cause, probably
like,
most
the back,
of it.
Right?
Well,
okay, so...
It depends. I kind of want to do it, like, in a figure eight that, you know, kind of is a loop. And so, like, if you actually, like, look around it, it'll loop back into itself, but it'll also, you'll be able to take a picture. But I don't know. I haven't seen any actual Skinimation tattoos done in this way, so if you guys know anybody...
Now someone's going to beat you to it.
Well, yeah, I put the idea out there, but you know what? That's cool. If you guys want to do it, send us a picture or an animated GIF of it. I would love to see it. Because if somebody else has already done it, absolutely. Like, I would much rather see that than do it myself. But
you know what would be extra cool / gross is if you had, like, some kind of mole or some kind of skin blemish and you, like, incorporated that into the animation like it's an obstacle they had to get around.
Yeah.
Sorry. Totally gross. Totally weird. Let's move on.
Okay. Well... In the vein of, I guess, augmented reality or something that isn't really there, but it is kind of digitally, Natas Kappas, who is an awesome skateboarder from back in the olden days. I mean, this guy is one of the legends.
You mean the 90s?
No, probably early 80s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, late 70s, I would say. I mean, this is...
Now I look stupid.
Yeah, you do. And sound stupid as well. Just kidding, man. But Natas Kappas... Skateboard animation. He did this, I guess it's an exhibition for an art gallery, where he actually animated skateboard decks. He's usually a designer of skateboards, obviously he's a skateboarder himself, designs shoes, but he did some really cool animations that go on a skateboard deck that's just really cool. You gotta check it out. And I've never really seen any of his animations before, but they're really well done. They're well-timed, it's cool because he's animating on a canvas that's a skateboard, so you already have a different composition built in that you have to work with. So it's pretty cool, but definitely check that out.
They keep the attitude of the original piece of art that was on the board.
I don't know if these are actually...
Oh, okay, so you don't know if he did these boards previous to or if he did them specifically for. Either way, they're pretty... like badass boards, and then the animation that goes with it is really badass. It reminds me of like being a little kid and being like watching Liquid Television on MTV, and some of that stuff was a little bit more than like a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old should be watching, and it was sort of intimidating and scary. That's how I feel about these, which is really cool.
It has that kind of hyper-real sort of feel to it, where it's like, it moves and it's believable, but it's like there's something off about it, and I'm sure he did that on purpose, so definitely check that out. I am a huge fan of his as a skateboarder, and just to see him doing some animations is really cool. Next is a couple of, I guess really interesting... This is an idea that I think would have already been done a long time ago, but they're just starting to do it, where... People are making internet TV, where there's original content that's streaming for free. And there's a couple of them. The first one is First Run TV by Gary Kleinman, who was a Disney Studios vice president. So you can go there and check that out. But they also have a really cool website called TV Prodigies. Again, the link will be on our Facebook page. But if you go there, you can sign up for this service. That's totally free. It's like a Facebook, but for people that are wanting to work in the industry. Mm-hmm. And you can, say, hey, I have an idea, or I want to work on an idea, or, I'm open to whatever, or I want to be a producer, or whatnot. And people can find each other on it, and it's pretty cool. And then eventually your stuff will get made for this particular firstrun.tv. And then there's another one called Toon Goggles, which is currently in beta test phase, but... People have been sharing it on social networking, and it's like they already have like 100,000 views or something like that. They have over 300 cartoon episodes, so it's crazy because in that talk, the one I was talking about before, the What Is Animation Today, the cartoon or the Creative Talent Network,
right?
They're talking about how it's really cool because a lot of people are getting away from the studios, and it's a lot of independent animators, independent studios. So they're this might be where things are going, where everybody kind of makes their own stuff.
I'm also surprised that this hasn't happened sooner, maybe because our generation is so ready for it to happen, and yet we're not the generation, we're not, everyone's not mentally like us and habit-wise like us. They're not willing to go on their phone to watch Netflix. They're not willing to do the things we do. But, like, I really thought after the 2008 writer strikes, when Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, you know, Joss Whedon went off on his own. He's like, okay, well, Hollywood's not doing anything right now. I'm just going to go make this little webisode TV show that was 3 episodes. Each one's, I think, 10 minutes long, maybe 15. And it's, gosh, what's his name? Doogie Howser.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris. And the guy from Firefly, also blanking on his name. But they came up with a great little 3-episode arc. And it got huge completely by, well, Joss Whedon has a name. That certainly helps. But, I mean, still, it proved that you didn't have to go through the machine of the studio, you know, concept on one end and massive marketing on the other to have a hit. And perhaps that was the inspiration for this, and it's just taken this long to get any kind of traction. But I hope that we see more of this. I really think that this is sort of the way of the future. Stuff like Hulu, you know, offering the premium stuff, you know, to where you can go and you can watch advertisements or you can pay.
Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, yeah, there's a huge market for people that want to stream free content, but it's taken a long time for people to figure out actually how to make that a profitable business. You know, yeah.
I think it's taken a while, because I don't think the nuts and bolts of doing it is all that new, or, I mean, the technology's been there for several years now. What I think it is convincing someone who has the money to invest, because it still takes capital to put a website like this together.
And if you have no actual, like, revenue stream coming in,
right?
You know, I mean, you got to figure out a way to make that profitable.
Completely new business structure, and there's already a business model in place, and what you have to do is convince an investor, hey, I think there's a new way to do business in this world that's radically different from what has always been since the invention of, you know, or the discovery of radio waves and television. You and me, we were both like, this needs to happen, because one, it puts the producer and the consumer only like one step away from each other, whereas before or now with what, you know, your typical stuff, it's 50 steps between 50.
It's a totally different concept, because with TV, the basic idea is that you have a receiver and you are being sent information and it's being beamed out to you, and you basically get
your homogenous group.
Yeah, you're
perhaps
getting
broken up into your sex or your age.
Now, you can pick what signal you want to receive in your TV, but with internet and streaming content, you are actually going and accessing the information.
Yeah, it's called opting in.
Yeah, so you're making the decision of what to go to, and nobody knows how, you know, really how in-depth it is of the decisions that people make, like what to watch online. But more importantly,
I think there are people who do know. I mean, researchers and whatnot, people who are investors are going to look into how the mentality of the video consumer. But again, you know, this is our generation who thinks this way. Other people still think, you know, older generations who have only ever known regular radio, television, or perhaps cable, you know.
The technology's changing faster than the system can.
The technology's changing faster than the known habits of certain generations, I think. But, you know, with things like Google TV, just everyone trying to bring on-demand to you, people's minds are, the way they think about consuming media is changing. All of this, of course, you know, you might think we've gotten a little off topic, but I don't think so, because what all of this ultimately means is that if the fewer the steps between the consumer and the producer, i.e. the animator in this case, the easier it is, the more likely it is that you can find, that you can take your idea, produce it with minimal help from a sort of studio system, a media giant, and in other words, there's fewer barriers to entry. There's fewer things keeping you from just going, you know what, I want to make this, I'm going to make it, I'm going to put it out there, And with these tools, with these groups, perhaps that's the way to help link the two together, you know?
And TV prodigies, that's absolutely. And we did kind of get off topic, so to get back on topic on Neil Patrick Harris, my dad actually used to work at a mini golf place, and Neil Patrick Harris would come in when he was a kid and beg him for quarters to the point where he was so annoying that they would just give him free tokens to go
play. That's completely off topic.
I thought.
All right, your subtle sarcasm.
But back on the topic of, you know, animation, which is what this podcast is about. Teams. This is a really crazy group of animators here. They have a little artist community.
Who's they, Mulder?
Well, it is Trout Gulch. And, quote, a kind of rural hacker space where they build their own houses, grow organic vegetables, milk goats, and produce state-of-the-art digital animation.
This is quoting who?
This is quoting...
NPR.
NPR. And, of course, this link will be on there. They do a lot of really cool stuff. Stuff for Bjork, Grizzly Bear, Spore the Video Game. And basically, they live in a little hobbit town of, like, huts and solar panels. And they make cartoons as a community. And it's really cool. You know, I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people, given the opportunity to do this, would do that. But these guys actually made it happen.
Yeah.
And they live in a very sustainable environment where,
With an ugly name.
Well, I think it's cool.
Trout Gulch.
Let's see here. They turn down companies like Sprite, Jeep, and Honda because they only want to do...
These guys are awesome.
Yeah. They only want to make cartoons and adverts for, you know, stuff they use. And stuff that they're proud of and you know, actually get behind. So
you mean they're not, like, in it for the money or something?
No. Yeah, they even mentioned that they'd be in a much better, you know... Maximizing their potential to make money is, you know, they're missing out on that. But really, you know, they're keeping their, what's the word? Their soul, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that way, they have room to grow. You know, if you don't go as far as you can.
Your soul, I think you lose your creative ability too. So.
Well, yeah, and then that's why these people are coming to them. That's why these companies are coming to them, because they're wanting to take that cool and use it for them. And if you use up all your cool for a company, you know, you don't have any left.
True. Well, and certainly the environment they've surrounded themselves in lends itself to a new way of thinking, at least. I mean, they live in... I mean, I'm looking at the picture. They live in Hobbit Town.
Okay? Yeah.
I mean, they live in huts that are half underground with solar panels next to them. So they're 21st century hobbits who happen to make animation.
But, I mean, they have a lot of sophisticated science and, you know...
That's why I say 21st century outfits.
Yeah. So, check that out. It's really cool. Well...
Are we going to be able to link the Bjork video?
No, I mean, I'll just link
the
article.
Link it back to here. Okay.
Yeah, you can check that out. So, yeah, I guess we can talk a little bit about Dennis Boyer. You kind of mentioned him earlier, but really cool guy, really awesome, you know, mind and very... I don't know. I guess just listen to the interview. Their story is very interesting, very inspiring, I guess, the way that they stuck together. And you also get to hear some really cool new information about the project that they're working on.
Yes. That's team. To stick with the theme, Dennis is part of Team Surf. That's C-E-R-F. I'm sure we'll have a link on the Facebook.
Yeah.
And he talks about their experience finding each other in school, and then what they did after school, not to say too much.
Yeah, and then afterwards we're going to play a talk by Quoc Tran. He did a talk for the IGDA Micro Talks.
Yes.
Where he basically did a study on what makes a good team, what makes, you know, a good studio. So yeah, we're going to play you guys that interview, and we'll be back. Let's just get started. Me and Robert, we're here with Dennis. And how do you pronounce your last name? I'm sorry.
Bouye.
Bouye, okay. Well, he is the director of Meat Buck, and what was the film before Café Soleil, is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Both awesome animations. I mean, we are huge fans of them.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. So I mean, just all around complete, you know, very cool, you know, rigs, texturing, animation, direction, composition, just all around a great, really fun
fun group of shorts, and we really appreciate you for making them.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, well, and sharing them online, too.
Really nice. Really nice.
Well, we got a couple questions for you. First, you know, how you got into animation, your background story, your origin story.
Okay, well, when I was in France, when I was doing my my last year at school, I don't know if you say the same thing in the USA, because I know we have a different system for school and stuff like that, but anyway, when I was 18, with my brother, we watched often a TV show about special effects on the movies, like special effects, how they were done with puppets or 3D and all that kind of stuff, and we were like fascinated by it, because for us it was kind of magic, you know, to have characters animated and have the feeling that they are alive and talking, and so for example the movies like Jurassic Park and stuff like, of course, the big classic of special effects movies, and so we watched that shows and we're like, yeah, we would like to do the same thing. So we started to draw. We didn't have a computer, so we just started to draw, and then we, a few years later, we learned about a school called SuperInfocom. So we went there. We passed the exam, the test entry. I don't know how to say that, but you know, you have to pass a test in order to get in. And so we did that, and we thought it was going impossible for us to be in the school, both of us, because it's already pretty complicated to get in. So yeah. two brothers at the same time would be even more complicated. But we finally did it, and we went into the same school and to the same class. So and when we were at SuperInfocom, we just met new friends, and that's how we got into the that kind of stuff. But
that is so cool.
Yeah, but at the beginning we really wanted to do special effects. That was our goal. And when we started to meet new people and started to see, watch animation movies and stuff like that, we just kind of changed our minds, and we got into animation and cartoons. And but I mean, I still I'm amazed by special effects and really realistic stuff. But that's true that now we prefer to do cartoon.
That is such a great story. So, going back to that art test, was that an actual like test of like artistic skills, or was that more of like an entry level exam of like general knowledge?
It was kind of both. I mean, it was first you have your it's during one day, so you have to draw some stuff. For example, fruits or vegetables on the table, you know,
and
exactly. So with just a pencil, so you do that, and also you do a small storyboard to show that you can, you know, create a story. And you have also you have to discuss with the people, some teachers, and show them your book portfolio, your drawings, and all you've done during the previous years. And so you have several tests during one day, and it's not that complicated, but it's very stressful, because we really wanted to go in that school, so it was very intense for us.
Well, it's a very high-profile, well-respected school, and I would definitely see why you would want to get into it. And
yeah,
how
it was, we watched the movies that were done in that school, and we were like amazed. So yeah, we really wanted to go in that school. But sometimes the students, for example, both of us, we did not really know how to draw at all. For my example, I didn't know how to draw, and I still don't know. but it's not what they ask. They ask for people knowing to just collaborate with other people and want to passionate about creating stories. So that's what they're searching for.
Now that brings me to the next thing. You have a really great team of people that you work with on multiple projects. Is this did you meet them at school?
Yeah, we met at school, and the first project we've done together. I mean, if I want to talk about just the Midbuck team, that means Yann and Vincent and Laurent. But Laurent is he's not really in the group. I mean, he went to a different direction after the movie. But to speak just about Vincent and Yann, we met, of course, 3 years ago, and we started to, well, just be friends, no, nothing more than that, just going to the movies together and go to the bars and just hang out together. Uh-huh. And then when we had to make the movie Café Serré, it was for a TV show contest, so we made that and we decided that we wanted to work together, but that was, I mean, it could have been with other people, it was not a big decision like, yo, no, I want to work with you. It was just, okay, we could work together. So we did that. And we realized that it worked really well because each of us had a specific domain. Like Yann was doing animation and really good. And Vincent was doing all the technical stuff. So rigging, setup. And I was doing, I don't know now what I said. Oh yeah, I was doing the story and some designs and some animations too on Café Serré and other stuff like that. So when we finished Café Serré, we were like, okay, that works. So we should stay together and try to do our graduation movie together. So that's what we did. And for the Salzman Peak team, so my brother working in the Salzman Peak team, it was kind of the same thing. They made a movie at the same time we made Café Serré, and it's called Scoop Volante. And they decided that it worked really well. The team worked really well, so they decided to stay together when they made their graduation movie, Salzman Pit. And when we both finished our graduation movies, we decided that, okay, maybe the six of us should stick together because we're friends, really good friends, and we have kind of the same visual style, 2D, 3D stuff. That's what we like to do. So we decided, okay, we should search for a job together. So that's why I decided to create the website, a common website for the two movies. So each people that would see one of the movies would see the other one. And if, of course, professional people would also know that we are a full team, and that would be good for us if you could hire us six people at the same time. We knew it was going to be difficult, but it worked too, so we were very happy about that.
That's such a great idea, yeah, and such a great marketing strategy, especially if you're trying to market yourself, you know, when you don't really have a company behind you.
No way. Well, we don't have nothing actually, and the boss of the studio we are working on right now is called Ankama in France. So the boss wanted to do a TV show, and so he saw the website, and he saw Salzman Pit at the beginning, and then thanks to the website he saw Midbuck, and he decided to contact all of us and ask us to come at this animation studio to work on a new project. So we were like, okay, that's that's very cool, because that's exactly what we wanted to do. So that's awesome.
Man. And the website, just for the people listening, the website he's referring to is salesmanbuck.com.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and you can go there, and you know, that has links to the blogs for Salesman Pete. It has links to other shorts. And all of the stuff you guys do is just great. I highly recommend everyone check it out.
Yeah, it's a pretty empty website, because the only thing on the website is a link for the two movies and the blog, and it has to take like 30 seconds to load them, because I don't know how to make a website, so I did that on Flash with two big images, and it doesn't adapt on every screen. I made that in a week, so it was pretty. I had to learn it, but it's enough for what we wanted to do with it, so that's good.
I think it's very effective, and like I said, a very smart marketing strategy. I mean, it definitely caught my eye when I saw that these two amazing projects that are separate are actually connected in a way where the people know each other and they work together. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, that's the reason why I wanted to interview you guys, you know, and talk to you.
Well, thank you.
And now, that'll move on to the next thing that I wanted to ask you was, you guys released all your shorts online for free. You know, you put them out on Vimeo or you know, sent out links and everything and just did it that way. Can you kind of talk a little bit about how that happened, you know, and how that worked out for you, and you think it's a good idea for other people to do that, or?
Okay, first you have to know that when we decided to put the movies on the internet, we had a problem with our school, because our school didn't want us to put the movie on the web. Too soon. They wanted to we could put the movie on the web, but maybe they wanted us to do that 1 year later, after we finished the movie, because they want first they want to put the movie in the many festivals.
Uh-huh.
So that our goal is to you do not show the movie until we got into many festivals, and then you can show it. So we decided, okay, yeah, that's cool, but we don't want to do that because we want to we want people to talk about both teams, and we want professional people from in the industry, 3D industry, to notice us. So we don't want to wait one full year before we put the movie. So we decided, okay, screw them, and we just during the summer we just made the website, and we put the movie as soon as it was finished. For us it was a bit later because we had to make the music, but okay, we just put the movies when it was finished, and we realized that it was a really, really good thing, because maybe some people prefer to go in festival because it's you can have prizes and getting noticed by people going to festival, but we realized that on the web there are also many interesting people that have interesting things to say, and of course good critics, and of course bad critics, because it's always constructive, and also a lot of professional people don't go into festivals, and they just watching movies like everybody else, like okay, I'm gonna go on YouTube or Vimeo and see if I can find something interesting, and sometimes they find something interesting. So yeah, we had plenty of comments and proposition from professional people. And I'm not sure we would have had the same thing if it was just going on festivals. And so, yeah, that's kind of... I think I would recommend it for people to put it on the web. Of course, for free, because, I'm not sure I would like to pay for a 5 minutes movie from students. So we decided, okay, we're just going to put that for free, and it should be okay. I mean, our goal wasn't to gain any money on that. Our goal was just to be noticed by people and try to find a job together. So that worked. And I would recommend it for people to do that, because that's an amazing way to get noticed, because people who like your movies just share them, on the Facebook, for example. We had plenty of links and people sharing them on Facebook, Twitter, and other social network like that. So it's really, really interesting to see that it spread like really fast and all over the world. And you don't have to wait that your movie going to a festival in the United States. You just put it on the web, and you know that the day after it will be in the United States, and plenty of people there will see them. So that's cool.
And the Meet Buckshort has been seen over 600,000 times on Vimeo, which is something you wouldn't be able to get in a film festival.
Yeah,
you wouldn't be able to get those numbers.
Yeah, yeah, and for example, yeah, that's we were very impressed by that number. I mean, it was a small competition between us and Spaceman Pit, so we won. So yeah,
funny.
Yeah, we won. So okay, I just want people to know that. But yeah, we were amazed by the number. I mean, still, when you put a video of a cute cat on YouTube, you'll get more people seeing it than Salesman Pete on Meeblex. But it was cool anyway to have that number, because on Vimeo it's more specific people and not everybody who can see it. I mean, it's sometimes more people linked to the animation world, or at least just on Vimeo people make easily constructive comments, and on YouTube it's just okay, a girl and a deer kissing, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with it, and that kind of comments. Well,
definitely
it's funny.
A different intelligence level between the two.
but it's fun anyway to read both, so yeah, it was cool.
I had a question for you, just following off of what you just said. Were there any consequences to your decision to take it basically to the online community rather than keep it in the festivals the way the school wanted you to do it?
The school has a partner, and it's a small company that company's goal is to sell the movies to TV channels, and they get a percentage of that, and they also get to send the movies to festival. So when we decided to put the movie on the internet, they just stopped trying to sell the movies to TV channels and sending it to festival. But we knew it was going to happen. And so we just decided, okay, we know that they are going to stop because, of course, if we put the movie freely on the web, they won't be able to sell it on four TV channels. So we knew that it was going to happen. We just decided, okay, if they are going to stop, we're just going to send ourselves the movie to festival that interest us. So big festival, because we don't have time to send to every small festivals like they do, but at least the festivals we know and we are interested in, like NC Festival or the SIGGRAPH, it's not really a festival, but still, and that kind of big festival. And so, yeah, it just was a little bit more work for us because we had to take care of that instead of that company, that small company. But it was better for us anyway to just, I mean, he let, obviously, it... we get a job thanks to that. So.
Yeah, it was a very effective strategy. I mean, and unique one, you know, that made you stand out apart from everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember that when we were to London, for example, to search for jobs, because besides Ankema, we had other companies interested in hiring us. So we went to London to see people, you know, just getting interviews and stuff like that. So, So we were like six people, just... getting into the office, like, hey, it's for the interview, and we're like a pack of six people. Like, okay, if you want to hire one people, you just have to hire the five of us, or you just like you're screwed. So but you don't have the choice; you just have to do that. So we went to six people into each companies, and sometimes they were like freaked out because okay, we're not sure we can hire six of you, but we'll think about it. And the other was like, okay, that's cool because you're on a full working team already made, and we don't have to think about something else. You're just there, and you just like each of you has a specific role, and you work already. So it's pretty fast if we want to start a new project to just hire all of you and putting you on a new project, and you know, we know that you will start pretty fast. So that was our goal, and yeah, it worked. And but it was funny to go in six friends going for interviews like that. It was pretty uncommon for the people.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's so much and it seems like such a better idea to do it that way because, you know, how most people or most places handle it is each individual project, you know, you have a whole different new team of people that don't know how to work with each other and they have conflicts of, you know, who does what work, and you guys have that already figured out, you know, and it seems like just a much, much smarter idea.
Yeah, most of the time in our school and with all the other graduation movies, the students they just spread and going in different direction because they are not scared, but they know that it's going to be really difficult to find a job with people that they like, with their friends. So yeah, but I don't know, we were scared to go alone in the industry, like, okay, what I'm gonna do, and if there's something and I don't know how to do it, I don't know, I'm scared. So we should stick together, guys, and try to find something, because I don't want to be yelled at by a boss or something. So we should stick together, and we'll be stronger if we stick together. So it worked well like that, and then yeah, it's for example, Vincent. He was in the big mid-book team. He went to work. Actually, it was different for him because he wanted to be out of France. So he went to work 2 months in London while we were searching for a job together. Uh-huh. So he worked alone. And so we thought that, okay, he's not leaving the group, but, you know, he's just going in his own way. And okay, good luck for him. And then 2 months later, he called us and like, okay, I really, really want to work with you because it's he was working at Zumi, you know, they are making advertisement in London.
Yeah.
So he was like, okay, it's hell, guys. It's a nightmare. I just want to work with you because I have troubles working with people I don't know, and it's pretty complicated. So he just came back with us. So
he came running back.
Yeah, exactly.
Prodigal son.
Yeah.
Well. One thing I would like for you to tell Vincent is he has a great taste in music. I love all of the music on his rigging reel. They're awesome.
Oh, yeah. I will say. Yeah. We love when we made Midbuck, we had to search for that kind of, I don't know if you call that rock folk country music, something like that. Well, the kind of really United States music, really American music. So we had to search for that for references because we wanted to put that kind of music in our movie. So we learned how to love it when we were searching for many, many songs, and we discovered a new, lots of new groups and lots of new people singing, and so it was pretty cool, actually.
And, you guys, music for your guys' project, I mean, in pretty much everything you guys do, it's always really great. That's such a great part of your guys' shorts, is the way you incorporate the music with it.
We really love music, and sometimes it's more because since we don't have many dialogues, because we don't know how to do it, and it was taking too much time to do dialogues, we knew that music would be a very, very important part of the movie, because it's, I mean, if the characters are not talking, the you have to give something for the audience to hear, interesting to hear, and not just the sound effects, also the music, something that's really match with the movie. So we took really much time to discuss with the musician and to find a good way to make the music match with the movie, and not slowing it down or not making it too fast, just having a good rhythm. And for Café Serré, it was just music we found on the web. We didn't have the rights to use them, but we used it anyway. And we just like music, and we love when the music in the movies are really well used. So we wanted to do the same thing, and we want to be able to watch the movie and just maybe not watch the video, but just having the sound and it works. I want to clap my fingers, so it kind of works. So that's okay. So that's kind of what we wanted to do.
Well, yeah, you guys' shorts is, you know, the epitome of cool, I would say. You know, it definitely has that feeling, and it you know, a very kind of, like you said, not too fast but not too slow. It's very cool, you know, and very the music just works perfectly with it. But that leads me into the next thing is, what's your guys' process for, okay, when, say you got an idea for Meatbuck and you have this character, you know, like, what goes through your head first? Like, do you think about how much it needs to move, what it needs to look like? If you want to talk about the character development process a little bit.
Okay, only the characters or everything?
Well, yeah, I mean, really, the whole project. I mean, if you have a certain thing you want to talk about, that'd be great.
Okay, so first, Yen was the first one to have the idea, and his idea at the beginning was just reversed hunting, animals chasing humans.
Yeah.
So everything started from that, and he was like, okay, I'd like to have animals with human proportion, moving and walking like humans, but chasing humans. So that would be cool. So like, okay, but maybe we should find something to appeal the viewer and at least a main character. So we decided we should search for a main character, a main interesting character, and so we decided to go with the buck, the dick, the deer, and so we decided to do that, to choose that character, because, I don't know, we felt that it was cooler to have not a predator, not a carnivore, but a deer was cool, with the, I don't know what you call that on their head, but the big wooden things.
Antlers?
Yeah. So we like that, and So we decided, okay, what would be cool to have, like, for a really appealing story and a funny story for us to tell. So, like, okay, we all get all guys in the team, so we kind of have that in common that we all met our stepdads, not stepdads, but, you know, our girlfriend's dad.
Yeah.
And when we met them, we were scared, and we were pissing our pants because we're like, all the time you're scared because you don't know what to expect. So we're like, okay, we should go with that story, that kind of story, and make the girlfriend dad a hunter. So you know that something is going to go wrong. And after that, you're just going to run. And it should be okay. You're just going to run for 5 minutes. And it should be okay, like, for a story. And for the characters, so our goal was to... We knew that it was going to be a hunt and something without... I mean, too much story, just basic chasing stuff with people running on the screen. So we decided that, okay, the cool thing to have for the characters and the main thing to keep in mind is that we should be able to recognize them very easily. So for each of them, we chose a color, a main color, a very strong color that the viewer should be able to distinguish, even if he hidden by trees and or he goes into a bush or he falls or he roll or he had a, I don't know, anything happen, you should be able to recognize that color in the screen, and you should be able, so you can really focus on the action and the story and the image stay clear, you know, because that was our main I don't know how to say that, worry, because we knew that we wanted to have a painted style, so with lots of brush strokes, and so we had that, the brush strokes, and a very fast moving movie. So like, okay, how are we going to do so it's not like it looks like crap with too much details at the screen. So we decided, okay, we have to get main colors for the characters and also simple shapes and very easily identifiable shapes, like very thin for the deer, and the girl smaller and with very green, and for the dad just a big tree. The dad is just a big tree with softer colors, sober colors, but anyway, you can recognize him. So that was a goal when we decided to work on the characters. And for our rendering process, we knew also that we had to keep simple shapes because it was really particular to work with the lightning the way we would contrast, well, just the way we would light the characters. We knew that we had to keep the shape simple. So yeah, we went on that. I don't know what to say else than that. I hope it's not too confused because I am confused myself.
No, it makes total sense. I mean, definitely the way you guys use color is, I think, one of the greatest ways that you guys tell your story. It definitely gives it a certain feel to it, you know, that is almost like you guys are in control of how, you know, of exactly what's happening on the screen at any point in time.
Yeah, we tried. I mean, when we decided, okay, the deer is going to run into the forest and go into a tunnel, so not very much light in that, and going to fall from the sky and going to be, I don't know, in the house or in the city. So we knew that it was going to be lots of different colors on the screen behind him. So we decided, okay, we should just put him on a bright orange, like just so bright orange that you cannot miss him at the screen. So that's why it's like very, very, very orange. So that was our purpose.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to ask, what's the story behind the piece of meat character, the steak character?
Oh, okay.
The ham.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, just it was at the beginning. It was our idea. It was supposed to be in Midbuck, and so we decided, okay, we should find a way so the father would look at the deer and see something unusual. And so we decided, okay, a big piece of meat, a big steak, like that should be funny. So okay, we decided, okay, we should keep that, and we wrote the story of that. And at the beginning, it was supposed to be a lot more present at the screen, with a full sequence with the dad running behind a piece of meat and with a gigantic fork and trying to chase him to eat him. So that was our purpose. And then we decided we would change something, we would change that. So we decided, okay, we won't use that piece of meat anyway. So yeah, just we tried to forget it. And then the salesman pit people were searching for a second character, a sidekick for Pete, and they thought that piece of meat would look cool. So we were like, okay, yeah, just do that because we don't use it anyway, so you can do it. And they started designing it and doing it. They did the character, and when we finished it, we were like, shit, that looks good. We should use it. So we tried to search a way to use it. So it's maybe not the best way to use it because it's like just a couple of time for a few seconds, but we really wanted to use the character because we thought it was funny. So yeah, we just decided to move a little bit and change a little bit the story. And yeah, we just tried to like we touch a little bit the texture of the character, so it looks like it's kind of staying in the mid-box style with brush strokes, and putting him in trainers and not the boots like in Salesman bit. And but yeah, we just use that. Use that because we thought it was funny.
I love that little guy, man. I think he's great.
Yeah, it works. When we saw that the Salesman Pit guy did that, we were like, oh man, why did we? I tried to find a way to speak really slow and clearly. When we saw that what Salesman Pit team made, we decided, okay, that would be such a waste not to use that character. So yeah.
Yeah, he's great. Well, the next question I have is, and you kind of already touched on it a little bit, but, next future projects, I mean, are you guys, I know you guys are working at, how do you pronounce it again, Ankama?
Ankama, yeah.
Okay, and you guys are doing a pitch for a show. I'm guessing you can't talk about it all too much, right?
Oh, yeah, actually we can talk about it because we finished the project a few weeks ago, and we went to... Yeah, thank you. And we showed it to the MC Festival. So, actually I can talk about it. So when the Ankama head, you say that? Ankama's head or boss decided to hire us, he wanted to do a TV show with a basic story that he already had in mind. So we just came in order to, execute that and... execute that and making what he had in mind. So we started on that, and it didn't go that good because
really?
we didn't have the same ideas. Yeah. And we are stubborn. Stubborn. So we knew like, and we were six, and it was alone. So we at all the meetings, we're like, no. Let us do what we want to do because we think it's gonna work. And of course, it's like when we think about it now, we think that we were bastards, morons, because you don't do that usually to your boss or. Anyway, we did it, and sadly it went wrong, and the boss almost fired us, and so we're like, okay, we maybe stepped the line a bit too much, and but the boss is really a great guy. He's called Anthony, by the way. So Anthony is really a great guy, and he decided to give us a chance, and he said, okay, maybe we don't have the same ideas for what I have in mind, so I'm going to let you do what exactly you have in mind. So just create a story, create characters, create a show from scratch, do it, and if it works, okay, it works. And if it doesn't work, just get the fuck out of my studio company. So we're like, okay, that's a deal. That works for us.
Yeah.
So in a few days, we had just a few days because the guy was pissed, so he just gave us a few days to give him a story. So we're like, we thought about lots of things, and we decided, okay, what we want to do is a couple of characters, funny characters, and we love Cartoon Network's TV shows, of course, and SpongeBob and Nickelodeon stuff. So we decided, okay, we're gonna live on that kind of thing. So now we are working on a new TV show, and it's called Muffin Jack and Jean-François. So it's a very French name. So our purpose was for guys from out of France having trouble saying it, that was our purpose, so they would actually remember it. So it's called Muffin Jack and Jean-François. So it's about Jack is a spy, a secret agent, the best of his kind. And one day, when he fights his evil archenemy, he's transformed into a muffin, a small muffin, like with just legs and arms, a talking muffin, face.
Yeah.
But really small, so he cannot do anything. He cannot fight the crime or the bad guys anymore. So he just stuck in that muffin body. So what he does is like he find a refuge in a bakery shop, in a bakery store, and he find who sells donuts and muffins, of course, and French croissants and baguettes, French stuff. And he finds a little guy working there, and it's called Jean-François. So the guy is like, I don't know, he's really weak. I mean, he's nothing. He's just it's a vegetable. He's really small. It's a kid. It's a kid. It's like a 10-year-old.
Okay.
Yeah, he's just boring. The guy is boring because he doesn't have any patience or hobbies. I don't know how you say that, but you know, he just collect stamps and watch TV all day and do nothing. So Muffin Jack arrives in the store and is like, okay, I'm gonna make you my sidekick. So I'm gonna train you. And since I cannot do anymore, I cannot fight the crime. I'll make you fight the crime, the crime with me, not the crime, the crime. I'll make you fight the crime with me. So we just train that little guy. So the story of the TV show is about this two guy, and with Jean-François carry Muffin Jack like in his backpack, and they go fight the crime. So of course Jean-François is not good at all at it. Because he sucks. He don't know how to fight at all. He's really weak, and he doesn't know how to run. And so Muffin Jack, just on the episodes, he tries to train him, and he tries to give him advices about life and stuff, and the bad guys and the girls, of course, because they have very typical way of seeing things. He is like James Bond. So the girls for him is really simple. You just like grab them by the hair or the hips and you just kiss them, and that's okay, it should work. And of course it doesn't work that way for Jean-François, but Jack is a very special guy because he really used to being famous and having a full exciting life, and Jean-François is the total opposite, so that we thought it was funny to make these two work together. So yeah, that show is about that, and I could show you, I will send you the picture of it, because we have a poster of it with all.
I would love that. Yeah, absolutely.
All of the team, the both team, so the six people, including me, we're in front of that poster when we went to Annecy Festival. But I'll send you that.
Yeah, that'd be great. I would love that.
Yeah. Okay.
Sounds like a genius idea, and I really want to see it. There's nowhere where you can like check out a trailer or anything online at this point, right?
We did a small teaser of one minute and a half teaser.
Okay.
But we cannot show it. Unfortunately, okay. we would like to do the same thing that we did at school. Like, screw them, we're gonna put that on the mail anyway. But we can't, because this time if we do, we'll just fire it. So we cannot do that. I think we'll be able to show it when the TV show is sold. So it should be pretty soon. I don't know, maybe the coming weeks or this summer maybe. And we would love to share it with everybody, because that's what we prefer that. We would prefer to show it to everybody, even when it's not finished. Like, okay, yeah, we have the first shot is made. We should put that on the web. And I'm like, no, okay, we don't have the right to do that. But shit, we'd like to do that. So yeah, we will try to show it to everybody pretty soon.
Well, yeah, and that I was going to ask you, how long is the pilot for the show, and how long would each episode be?
It's 13 minutes each episode. So
a little bit longer than what you're used to, huh?
Yeah. It's right now we are trying to write episodes, the first episodes. It's like, it's a nightmare, because we're not used to that length at all. So and the dialogues also, we never did that, so it's... of course, since we were, bastards with the boss of Ankama, the guy was like, okay, yeah, you want to do everything by your own? Okay, you'll do everything. You'll write this episode, and you'll do everything. So, of course, we're like, okay, we don't have the choice, so we'll do it. And so now we are, like, really fighting to have a long, interesting story, because, we are just used to 1 or 4 minutes stuff. So this time is like, 30 minutes. So it's really, really interesting to work on it. And it takes so much time, but really interesting to work on that.
That sounds so great. I can't wait to check it out. It sounds like a wonderful show. So.
Yeah, well, I hope we'll be able to share it soon.
Well, cool. All right, well, we're down to the last question, which is a segment called Yeah, I'd Animate That, where basically we ask you guys, or ask the animator, what would be your optimal thing, your favorite character, anything that you would want to animate the most,
like something famous character, or just something fun.
Anything in the back of your head that you've always thought that'd be real fun to animate, you know, like some kind of creature or a character or some an established character or a new one.
I have few things in mind. One right now, since we are working that TV show, we'll have to make, we didn't make that yet, but we'll have to make old people, the Jean-François grandparents. So like, we just can't wait because we really want to animate, and me particularly, we want to animate old people. That's because we find it's very interesting and very fun. So we really want to do that. So that's, yeah, first thing to do for me, that would be that. And also the kind of things I'd like to do. I'm not really an animator, but you know, create. If I have to create story and make telling stories about something, it would be something in space because I love that. And the animation, I think, in the how do you say one. Okay, the English word for that, I don't know, but you know, when you are in a space station and you fly around, or you come
back. Astronaut or
astronaut, like astronauts, you know, flying around without having to touch the ground, and so I would love to animate stuff like that because I think it's really interesting and it could bring many, many possibilities for animation and action sequence and stories. I don't know, when I was at CELA school and before we had to make Midbug, I had in mind stories in space with a redneck. Yeah, you say that in English. Redneck. Yeah. Who has been captured by aliens, and next to him in the same cage there was okay. The story was crap, but anyway, I'll tell you again. So the redneck was captured by aliens, and next to him was a gorilla. Yeah, and they just wanted to escape, so they just teamed up and then. They tried to escape from the alien ship, and it was they flew around in the ship, and it was that was the story I wanted to do. But because I just love to do, and my first 1 minute movie when I first learned 3D, the first year we learned 3D, it was a guy in a space truck, like a flying truck in the space, with a little Elvis doll. And it was like there was a Elvis music on it, and it was making it flying around and dancing. Anyway, it was my first movie, my first unfinished movie, because I was never able to finish it. But anyway, I love space and that kind of feeling that you have when you just fly around without any constraints. I think it's pretty great. I think it could bring many possibilities to animation sequences. And I'd like to do that. I had made that. Yeah, I had made that. I would animate that.
You look forward to it. Well, yeah. One question before we go. Is that space short, is that online? The one you didn't finish? You don't have any of that up or like any sample clips or anything, do you?
No, it's not online. But I could send you some shorts of it.
If you don't mind, I'd love to check them out.
It's scary because it was my first year in 3D, and it doesn't look good at all. I mean, it's still now, I'm just I keep this because it's memory. But if I could just delete it, I will do it because it was it was awful. And but yeah, I will send it. It's just an unfinished shot put next to each other, so you don't even have a story. It's just the shots I had time to finish. So it's like it lasts only 20 seconds or something, and. But I'll send it to you. We'll see.
That'd be great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this interview, Dennis. I mean, it was great talking to you. Awesome stories, man. Like, the way you approach things and the way your team approaches things is just, it's really unique and, like, really interesting and pretty cool.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And it was very interesting for me because it made me realize that we are freaking lucky to work all together now. And, so, yeah, thank you. And, really interesting to have your opinion on stuff. And, I mean, we won't be able to do that again, I guess, because it's one time for any podcast. But anyway, it was very interesting for me to discuss with you about that.
Well, and I would love to interview you again another time later on down the road.
Yeah, maybe when we'll be famous and rich and we'll sell Muffin Jack and Jean-François to all around the world.
When you don't need to do podcasts anymore, when you don't want to.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, thank you so much again, Dennis. We'll keep in touch and keep an eye out for your new stuff.
Yeah, sure. I'll send you the stuff, and we'll keep in touch.
Thank you again.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, well, I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. Dennis, of course, is an awesome guy, and we really appreciate him for doing this.
Super down to earth. Like, I mean, not that I had any preconceived notion, but I mean, just
we're both huge fans of Meet Buck, and this is like our, well, for us personally, this is our biggest interview, and he was so cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, the dude is one of my heroes, especially, like, you know, that whole group, because, honestly, I'd rather watch one of their shorts than a Pixar short, just because it has, I don't know, it's something about it that is just super cool, you know, and, like, they have the confidence, like, that they know what they're doing, and they're not trying to be preachy or, you know, not trying too hard to make a
I don't think they stopped for 1 second to think how they looked making this thing, you know? I think they just made it.
Well, I mean, the rendering techniques are, you know, extremely cool and, you know, almost 2D-like. If you guys haven't seen these movies, you have to go check them out. Salesman Buck is the website. But, man, I mean, the animation, the rigging, everybody on that team is just amazing. And I'm huge fans of all of them. And I would highly recommend you guys to go to their blog, check out every single one of their demo reels, all of their, you know, how-to videos. And just like soak it all in, because these guys are definitely really cool, and I really honestly think that they're one of the first ones to do animation like how they're doing, that it's just going to be how most people are going to be doing it in the future, because it's smarter and cooler and better looking, you know, the way that they texture, the way that they render, the way that they animate.
But I mean, again, I think a good portion of that has to do with the fact that they went to school together, they all learned the values and the virtues of the same of the techniques that they use. So in other words, they all have the same understanding of the techniques that they use, what they've learned, and what they want to do. I think a big part of what makes it good isn't just how innovative they are or their vision, is the fact that they work well together.
Absolutely, yeah, and there is a unique vision involved there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is a team vision, you know. The way that they, you know, make that happen as almost like a cohesive...
It's six minds, like, cut into pieces and then, like, sewed back together as one mind.
A French Frankenstein. A Frenchenstein. We're going to leave you guys with a really cool study by Kwok Tran. Kind of talks about things he, you know, kind of... He found out by interviewing studios, you know, team leaders... All different kinds of people in the industry, and you know, you can translate it to any type of, I guess, work environment. But absolutely, animation and you know, games, films, whatever, you can learn a lot. So, thank you guys for listening to the podcast.
Thank you.
And we're gonna hopefully interview the Portuguese guys one more time before they leave. They're almost wrapping up on their project, so it's really cool. We want to see what they did and how far they've come and what they learned. So. We will leave you guys with Kwok Tran. See you for the next one.
Six or seven years ago, he would be the one introducing this event because he was the chapter coordinator of what is now IGDA Austin. he has been both a programmer and a production roles at NCSoft, Junction Point, and now at Game Salad. Please welcome Mr. Kwok Tran. Just so you know, this screen is black. You'll have to look at that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, sir. Wow, yeah, it really is bright up here. So, hi, folks. This is really pretty cool. It's really neat to be sharing the stage with so many people that know so much about what they're talking about. So I'm going to break that trend by talking about something that I don't really know anything about what I'm talking about. I'm the director of platform development at Game Salad, but my talk tonight is actually going to be business-oriented, based off of a study that I did about a year ago. And as a disclaimer before I start, Game Salad is one of the participants in the study, but I was talking to them and doing the study before I actually started working there. I'm also going to apologize for the bad internet art that I ripped off. So this talk was inspired by a conversation I had with a friend of mine who ran a small startup, and what I was asking about were the books Good to Great and Built to Last. And if you haven't read those yet, they're pretty neat reads. They look at a variety of different companies to examine what made those companies successful, what enabled those companies to live like, you know, 100 years or more, and what was the difference between those companies that survived and succeeded versus the ones that competed against them and dropped by the wayside. And so I was asking him questions about whether any of the principles outlined in those books were applicable to startups, things like culture and vision and stuff like that. And so our discussions led to discussions with other entrepreneurs. All of them look a lot like Yahtzee. And and an emerging thread that came up in our conversations was the role of focus in these organizations. And so from talking to a variety of different startups, what I found was that for a small studio starting without outside capital, focus is essential. Small studios should be using their own products. They should be wary of taking on too many projects at the same time and the impact that it has on team size. And they need to underdo the competition by focusing on a few key features rather than like delivering a bucket of features that don't really address the core needs of their consumers. So during the interviews, I talked to a variety of different studios. For the purposes of this study, I talked to Arcane, Certain Affinity, Game Salad, and Space Time. And so over the course of the interviews with different people from these different studios, a lot of them were talking about how they were basically making games for themselves. So like Harvey was talking about how their creative vision at Arcane pulled them towards a specific type of product. So like they totally dig on FPS sims like Bioshock and Deus Ex, and all their business decisions are kind of guided towards them working on those type of games. Tim Fields from Certain Affinity said that they build the games that they wanted to play. Michael Augustine from Game Salad said that they were the initial audience for Game Salad, which is a game creation tool, and that they had, at the beginning, ideas for what features they wanted. And Gary Gaddis from Space Time said that when they were working on Pocket Legends, that they were influenced by passion to work on the projects that they were working on. And so being in your own audience helped the studios maintain focus in a few different ways. Michael Augustine talked about how using their own software helped the company identify their customers' pain points. And Ref Colantonio said that maintaining a focus on the games they loved at Arcane helped them establish a reputation, which led to companies wanting to work with them because of their dedication to FPSMs back when they were an independent studio. Studios also talked about the number of projects and teams within a studio and how each of the studios had challenges when they were expanding beyond one project. So Tan Tran, also of Game Salad, said that when working on multiple projects, the team became really resource constrained, and how Game Salad needed to balance the features they could provide one set of customers to the features they could provide to other customers. And Ref Colantonio said that Arcane's biggest challenge was learning how to balance resources from one project to another. Harvey also added that the bureaucratic overhead needed to support multiple projects could lead to conflicting visions from top management and other studios. So this could also lead to turf wars and managers within a company buying resources. But the strongest common thread was a tight focus on feature sets. So in the book, A Good Hard Kick in the Ass, Rob Adams writes that startups should focus on reaching the market quickly rather than trying to ship the killer product. And basically what getting to market quickly does for you is it helps you establish a toehold in the market. Market conditions can change really quickly, and if you take too long, your assumptions can become invalid. And shipping with a minimum feature set helps studios allocate their vital precious resources to greater effect. So going back to Gary, he said that starting with the core foundational experience at Pocket Legends, they focused only on the features that contributed to the core mobile MMO experience. And Harvey said that when they looked through their projects, they were trying to find features that weren't essential to the project's vision to let them determine what was really important. And in the case of the example he was talking about, they were trying to figure out how to winnow down the level because they had a lot of tech constraints, they had some design constraints, and they were trying to figure out what to do. The tech seemed like it was going to be really expensive to implement, and they basically boiled down the level that they were working on and realized that a lot of the tech and a lot of the design challenges that they needed just really kind of boiled away because it wasn't essential to the level they were working on. So going back to Tan Tran from Game Salad, he said that his best decision, the company's best decision, was to release Game Salad with a minimal feature set because launching early helped Game Salad define a position in the marketplace. So now I can go back to my friend and provide him some more information. I can tell him about how startups successful startups are their own audience. They're wary of rampant growth and how it affects their team size. And narrowing the scope of their projects helps them reach the market more quickly. So the reason why all of this matters is that small studios have finite time. They don't have the time to conduct focus tests. If you can understand your audience, it'll be easier for you to make quick decisions on what will help your audience the most. At my current company, I also work on iPhone games on the side, but as an iPhone game developer, I can understand and prioritize features that our customers really want the most. Small studios, especially self-funded studios, have finite resources. So you don't have the luxury to split your forces when it's so vital for you to focus on the problems at hand. And small studios need to understand their audience to make quick decisions. They need to concentrate their people on the problems that really matter, and they need to concentrate their efforts on the features that matter the most. So the sooner you can release a product, the sooner you can start bringing in money. So granted, this is a small sample size, like only 4 studios, and it's a small list of commonalities, but I'm still working on this study, so if you'd like to talk about your experiences and like basically how I'm wrong, I'd be really happy to listen. Because also, really, this study was an excuse for me to like talk to different people at companies and find out, you know, what they thought was cool about it. That was really neat. So that's it. Thanks.